When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
All right. And I'm Dave Eng. I'm glad to be here with you, Chris and Anthony, tonight.
And this is episode 484, our friend's favorite game, Dave Eng. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me, Chris. Glad to be here.
It's a pleasure to be here. We've known each other now at this point for, I guess, we're getting close to 2 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as we talked about before we started the episode, gaming is such a big and flush and beautiful community. It's a cosmos of different areas of interest when it comes to tabletop stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are very few of us out there, Dave, that really kind of dive deep into the academic side of tabletop gaming, mm-hmm. while at the same time enjoying a fun game from time to time with friends.
Mm-hmm.
So Dave, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your gaming, the groups that you work with, and your professional work?
Sure. So thanks, Chris and Anthony, for having me on the show. I'm really glad to be here, considering that, Chris, you were on my show before. But overall background for me, so I'm an educator, I'm a designer, I'm a researcher, really focus on using games in general, but again, focusing mostly on tabletop games. So in addition to that, I am a faculty member at NYU, in the School of Professional Studies. I teach in the Certificate of Learning Design program there. I also host the website universityxp.com, and I also lead a professional group called the Game Space Learning Alliance. We just had our annual conference called the Game Space Learning Virtual Conference. My full-time role, though, is I work for a company called Know Before as a senior e-learning instructional designer, in which I create gamified learning and assessments there. And I also run a nonprofit called Bandidos Gaming. We're a 501c3 nonprofit that really focuses on tabletop games, community, and learning through games. And we are based out of like Bergen County, New Jersey / Rockland County, New York. So that's how I split all my time, but basically everything's connected to games in some way.
Well, that's the funnest thing in the world. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
What do you do for a living? Games? No. I didn't ask what you do for fun. What do you do for a living? No. It's games.
It's games.
And what do you do for fun? Games. That's also games too.
Just games. Yeah.
You have to justify the massive amount of games that we have in our homes. That's mm-hmm. that's how I look at it.
Exactly. So,
it's like, I have these, I better get a job that's related to those, otherwise people are going to talk about me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, Dave, it's fantastic work that you're doing. You mentioned that you and I did a solo podcast,
mm-hmm.
and that's actually going to come out in December,
yep.
where I talk about board game academics and a lot of stuff that I do in higher education related to tabletop gaming.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we were at your conference online last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And you also have one coming up as well.
Yeah, so we had We met originally at the Long Island Tabletop Expo. This was last year. That's why I met you, Chris, and you, Anthony. And then I invited you all to the Game Space Learning Virtual Conference. Last year, you all did a live presentation, specifically the one that you did at the Long Island Tabletop Expo. Mm-hmm. And then we had just this past June had the Game Space Learning Virtual Conference, which went over really well, connected with a lot of different academics on basically every continent except Antarctica, which was really fun.
Maybe next year, Dave. Maybe next year.
We'll get someone from Antarctica, from McMurdo Research Station. But we also have, for Banditos Gaming, the nonprofit, we have an event coming up, our annual event called RockCon. Mm-hmm. And we are privileged to be able to host it in an IKEA, so an IKEA Paramus. Mm-hmm. You can go there, you can pick up a Calyx, you can also come to our convention, and we are we're preparing to do that right now. It's a pretty small convention since it's only one day, but this will be our second year there, and they're glad to have us back.
Excellent. No, that's wonderful. So Dave, one more question before we get into the episode, because Anthony and I talk about this a lot on the episode, and I know a lot of people out there don't know too much about the academic side of tabletop gaming. And obviously you teach at NYU. Mm-hmm. Why tabletop gaming? Why is this an essential read, so to speak? Why should people think about tabletop gaming beyond, you know, getting together and throwing some games down with friends?
Sure.
What's special about it?
So I think, and I think I'm preaching to the choir here for you two, but like tabletop gaming is just something that's very visceral. It's not something that I get from playing, you know, like PC games or console games or mobile games or anything like that. To play a really good tabletop game, I'm sharing a visceral physical experience with other players. And I think like that actual experience, that communication, that connection with others is something that is very endearing to me. And particularly from like an experience standpoint, I don't think anything really beats that aspect of tabletop games. On the flip side, I would say like from an academic and also like design perspective, you know, like people that are not into game design or just into the development of games overall, they can really turn to tabletop games as a means of just getting into design, because you don't have to have a background in programming or software development. You can just pick up, you know, like a blank deck of cards and start designing from there. So I like to say that tabletop games bring out sort of the best in connections with other people.
Sure.
They're very accessible. And, you know, like anyone that's played a lot of tabletop games, you can always house rule stuff. You don't like how the game plays? We'll house rule it. And we'll make it that you can do this. And I think that that's something that is not available with, you know, digital games, console games, mobile games, and the like.
So technically, since everybody, you know, house rules games from time to time, everyone's been a tabletop creator, right? So it's not really a big leap from a house ruled Uno, right? Now you can play a +2 and a plus on top of a +2 to, hey, you know, it'd be fun, a game that had all +2s or something like that, right? It doesn't take that much. Everyone modifies the game, especially if you're playing with kids, right? Anytime you play with children, you're always modifying the game to kind of fit their game style. Or if you have new players at the table, you're like, let me show you how to do some things, or let me give you some paths to victory. You're kind of, you know, creating a game experience at the table. And especially all those role play gamers out there and the DMs and the GMs out there who are creating an experience. They are game creators.
Yeah.
So a little bit of homebrew goes a long way, to say the least.
Right.
All right. Well, Dave, we're going to get into a great episode here, but before we get into our acquisition disorders, Anthony, BGA had a little conference recently. We just talked about the academic conference that we had last week at Dex Lite in Morristown, New Jersey, thanks to our good friends at Double Exposure. And now we have some pictures, we have some videos up on our Discord.
Yeah, I mean, if you had previously registered or attended either of our conferences, you have access to the Board Game Academics Discord channel. And we've posted the videos for all of the presentations there. So everything recorded successfully despite the fire alarms. I was very excited about that. So all 13 videos are up there, including our keynote and closing panel. They are available, and they will be posted to the website here in a couple weeks as well. So we've got them kind of all up there now for attendees first, and then we'll get them out to the rest of the world very shortly. But I'm excited to share them with everybody. We had some really amazing, fantastic presentations. Super excited to read the papers that come from them.
Yeah, and just like everyone's a game designer in their own right, everyone is a scholar in their own right when they put a tabletop game at the table and they're examining the components and figuring how it fits with their friends, with their family, with the society at large, or as a practitioner, what can you do with this game? Maybe it's good for a certain population. Maybe it's good for kids. Maybe it's good in this kind of social situation, that situation. Bam, you're a scholar. You're right on point. So these videos and all this information that's being created by all these scholars, the academics, and the practitioners out there is stuff that's right up your alley. You just did not realize it yet. And some of that will open you up to new ideas about tabletop gaming and how you can employ it in a number of different ways. And again, it's always good to support our friends out there, all the academics out there. Right, Dave?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm really glad to be able to connect with you all because I feel like there's so few board game academics in the entire community that we really kind of have to band together.
Absolutely. It's 100% true. The few, the brave, the a little bit insane.
Yeah. Got to support each other through all the psychosis that comes with it.
Well, we got to champion this stuff. There's a lot of good people out there, a lot of good designs, a lot of good scholarship, and a lot of good charity work. We do and you do as well. So a big thanks to you, Dave, for all that work that you put out there, especially the charity work, because it does make a big difference in the world. And we're so great to have you as part of our community. Now, with that said, let's actually get into the fun stuff. Let's talk about the games that we want at the table. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders. Anthony, what do you have up this week?
Okay, I'm going to go first with something big and corporate and definitely going to back anyways.
Oh, no. We just talked about all our social anarchy. Why? Why? Know, yeah.
So everything you said, forget that for now. let's talk about some comic books.
Oh, yeah.
So DC United went up on GameFound.
Oh, no.
And we've talked about this before. So, and anybody listening to this knows what the United brand is. We had three Kickstarters for Marvel United. They made millions of dollars. So naturally, they're like, let's do Batman and Superman.
The quest for more money.
Quest for more money, yes.
Yeah.
So they've been prepping for this for months. Lots of previews. But now we actually have some information about what they're selling us. It is, as you'd expect, a CMON Kickstarter. I guess it's on GameFound now, but whatever. Crowdfunding. Yes. So it's like $100. And then they add like every week or two, you're like, here's another add-on and here's another add-on. It'll end up being like $300 or $400 to get everything. Will I do that? No.
He says that now, people.
Well, no, definitely no, because there's no room for it. So I was I was looking at it. And the other part of it, and I'll just run through like what they're doing, is like the stuff about the DC universe that I find the most interesting is typically like the little bit darker stuff that came out of the 80s, early 90s. So Dark Knight stuff, you know, kind of that Kingdom Come era of Superman. That's not what they're doing here, which is fine. They'll probably do it later. This is more like the Super Friends, sure, Justice League peak late 90s, early 2000s or 70s era of stuff. Like the promos that you get for the base backing is the Wonder Twins and Gleek. So it's that kind of stuff, which I love, but it's not so much love that I'm like, I'll find room. I'll find room somehow. I will not find room. I'm not going to do it. I'll probably pick up like the base box from a Walmart or something at some point. So it is that. It is, you know, your base box is your core Justice League. It's Batman and Wonder Woman and Superman and Flash and Aquaman and all that good stuff. And your core villains with Joker and all the rest. You also get the Teen Titans box kind of built in there. Teen Titans
Go?
No.
They're
actual teenagers, not little chibis. Which is funny because they're chibis, but maybe the chibi of a chibi would implode. I'm not sure.
Too meta, man. I can't go there.
It's too meta. So you get Raven, Starfire, Beast Boy, Robin. Good stuff. And the villain there, Trigon, which is great.
It's a big mini.
It's a big mini. Yeah. Like the demon lord there. And then the only additional box add-on that they've announced so far is Metropolis, which I was like, this is cool. But again, it's like that era of stuff where I'm just not quite as clicked into it. It comes with Steel and Supergirl and Crypto. I love the little Crypto mini. It's very cute. Jimmy Olsen, Doomsday, Brainiac. Like, you know, Superman stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we've got our unlockables, which, again, at this point, it's a lot of deep cuts. There's some, like, solidly deep cuts in here. Like, sure, you get Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, but you also have, like, Wildcat and Xan, right?
Sure.
Which, again, Wonder Twins, or Parasite, Red Tornado. Like, if you don't read a lot of DC Comics, you don't necessarily know who these characters are. Mm-hmm. So that's good for my wallet. It's also good for DC super fans, and I'm happy for them, because a lot of people are very excited about this. And we'll see what else they add. But I was worried they would go, like, full Batman everything.
That's going to be another Kickstarter.
Probably, right? Like, yeah. Like they did X-Men United, they'll do Batman United next, or Gotham United, or whatever they want to call it. And then that one I'll have trouble with, because that's the stuff I'm more interested in. But it's really CMON. It's their typical formula. Here's a box of stuff. Here's a huge box of Kickstarter or game crowdfunding exclusives that you get along with your pledge. If you just do that, it's like $60, which is reasonable. But hey, here's 5 or 6 more boxes of stuff you can add for another $300. Eh? which I think I'm past that at this point. But a lot of people are in on it. So it's up on GameFound for like, two more weeks when you hear this. You can check it out and see what they've unlocked at this point. But it's exactly what we thought it would be, which is fine. Mm-hmm. And the game is good. Marvel United is good. It's a good formula. I will be interested to see what they tweak on it, because every release they tweak it a little bit. But I will not be finding a new Kalox for myself on this one at this point.
Dave, have you picked up any of the United stuff or played any of it?
You know, I saw that I have like the Amazon alert set up for like ultra low price, and I saw that Marvel United was up there. I saw they got pretty good reviews, but again, like, I am low on volume space on my Kallax. Sure. So what I did was I just posted it to my group. I said, hey, this is a record low price for Marvel United. It's pretty well rated. Please someone buy it so I don't have to buy it. But I have not got it on the table yet. And I would say that, you know, between the two, I'm more of a Marvel IP fan than DC. Just because DC, like, IP, the one I'm most familiar with is Batman. Yeah. But other than that, like, if I was more familiar with it, I would play it. And yes, if anyone was going to host it, I would definitely play it.
It's a good game. Yeah,
It's surprisingly a good game, considering how simple it is. The system's very good.
Yeah, and it's because it's so simple, they can tweak it and do lots of weird things with it, which is, I think, why it's so successful, because they can have, here's 200 expansions, they're all unique in some small way. It's not just like, here's a new miniature. Like, they each kind of play slightly different, which is what makes it interesting.
Yeah, Eric Lang talked about this, how he wanted this game to be like a lifestyle game for families. And he was spot on. I mean, with the IP alone, the concept of, like, you can play this, I mean, I don't know, Anthony, you have kids, like, how young can you play this with, do you think? You play 2 cards, right?
Depends on the kid, but yeah, 6 or 7 probably.
Yeah, and again, it's relatively recognizable, you know, superheroes out there. It came down to, I guess, they had to find a family-friendly version of DC. Like you said, it got pretty dark there, right? In the DC universe, I mean, Superman is evil. Superman and Batman are evil every other week now for some reason. So, so they went super friendly. I was really surprised that they went super friends. Xan and Jaina and Gleek, like, I remember those from, like, watching the reruns. Like, I think we're in the 70s or maybe. Yeah. And I was just like, I would never think that that would be something that they would put in, like, this is supposed to entice people. Like, you must be of a certain age to remember this. Or I don't know if they ever really featured later on as big as they were as Super Friends.
Yeah, I mean, Super Friends was on, like, Cartoon Network a lot when I was a kid.
The old school stuff, right?
Yeah, so maybe that's what they're targeting, is, like, older millennials, younger Gen X, who watched this stuff in the 90s.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that was one thing, it kind of hit me a little bit. I was like, oh, nostalgia, that's a thing I remember. I want to back that. And then like the Teen Titans stuff, which I'm a fan. I was a fan of the cartoon that was on there, Cartoon Network. But this is not the version I mean, this is more the comic book version. This is not the TV version. And it's certainly not the Teen Titans Go, which is then Super Kitty, which again may not fit with this version of the Super Friends. Although that might have been more enticing, but I'm assuming that's coming in a later box.
Probably.
So yeah, good try. Good try, DC United. You didn't get me.
No.
But Simon is very confident. They always put out their, I always think it's funny, like they put out their price for the package and they give you practically nothing. You're like, I'm not backing this. And like 3 weeks later, it's full of like 600 miniatures. You're like,
yeah,
all right, I'll back the stupid thing. And, but I got to believe, just like X-Men, the next one, like you said, Gotham United, because all the Batman stuff is a whole, should be a base system too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of it.
So very cool. All right, Dave, what's your acquisition disorder for this week?
So for this week, and I think it just got delivered, is River Valley Glassworks by Allplay.
Ooh.
And this was offered on Kickstarter. It was part of a dual game campaign. It was River Valley Glassworks and a small box game called Lore. And I brought this up before. I think what really got me was one of the reviewers was just like, if you like Azul, you're really going to like this. Great components, easy decision framework and structure. And it's about, you know, set collecting for different colors. And, you know, pair that with anthropomorphized animals, you know, that have asymmetric powers. If you want to play that, then I was all good to go. And I went all in with like all of the deluxe components. So I'm hoping that when I eventually get it and open it, I'm not going to regret this purchase immediately because it's going to take up some additional shelf space. So that's recently delivered, I believe, and I'm waiting to get it on the table.
That must be a very heavy box for the size because it has all that nice glass pieces.
Yeah. It does. It does.
I looked hard at this, and and as I think I mentioned to you earlier, I was going to back this just because of the pretty glass pieces.
Yeah.
But I had been burnt so many times by pretty games on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, every once in a while you regret not backing it, but most of the times you regret backing it because it's such a super light, thin kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, it's not a bad thing, but again, it depends on the people at the table, so...
Yeah.
I don't know, like Canvas is one of those games which I own all the stuff for. I don't own the big box for it. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I have it, but it's super light. It's pretty, super light. So, yeah, that's another one. I will play your copy, though, Dave. I will, and then I will cry a little bit. And I'll be like, Dave, can I take this home?
Well, when you make it up to the next game night, we'll get it on the table. I told you, I'm playing it on BGA. That's how much I like it. I'm like, yeah, I'm prepared. I'm prepared to play this in person.
Very nice.
That's great. It's very cute.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk about an old school acquisition that just does not seem to go away for some reason. And that is the Stefan Feld City Collection.
Mm.
It's back again because we tried to kill it before, but it keeps coming back. And this seems to be the third edition of it. It's the classic special edition. This is currently on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, if you missed it before, it's the first four games of the City Collection, and now they're in a new special classic edition with game trays. So I don't know if you remember the history or the trauma or the escapades with this, but I did back the original first four games. It's Stefan Feld. I love the man. He does amazing designs. And they're all very diverse, and so many of them went out of print. So when they announced that they were doing the City Collection, which would fill in at least, I think the gap that I had was Macau. Hmm. And you got number editions, and he was going to, you know, reinvent his old, you know, catalog and bring some new games in. I was very excited about that. So I backed all the stuff on the initial one. I got all four games. And again... Marrakesh was fine. We've talked about it. We even talked about it recently. It's a fine new game. I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of the Cube Towers. But the other three games, you know, New York is kind of New York again. Amsterdam for Macau. And then Bruges, one of my favorite games of all time, with Hamburg. They're bigger. There's more stuff to them. But generally... it wasn't better than his originals, as far as I was concerned, my humble opinion. These new versions are, again, slimmed down. So the initial cost was like $129. And that was kind of super expensive for what you got, because, again, it was this idea of like, you were going to be able to collect all his games, and it was going to be like this beautiful collection. Mm-hmm. And it was they have stickers, so you could get the same number, and you could put the same number sticker on all the games. These were your collection of games. And I have Stefan Fell's autograph, which I never thought that was something I needed, but I have that. Mm-hmm. And now they're $50 cheaper for Hamburg, Amsterdam, New York is $35 cheaper. And then Marrakesh, which was honestly way too expensive. I mean, it's a big game. There's a lot of pieces in it. Originally was $149. Now it's down to $89. It seems like the components are still good. It is not the super deluxe fancy version that first came out. But these are newly designed boxes. These are newly designed setups and player boards. There's some additional content in the game. Primarily, if you did not back this initially, if you did not back the new edition, you now have an opportunity to back this. So the super fancy deluxe edition that I backed had all the fancy stuff. And then they did an essential edition, which stripped out all the fancy stuff. And they went too far, in my opinion, of stripping things out. And now this classic edition has at least a double layer boards, which I think are essential for the gameplay. Mm-hmm. So if you have not backed it and you were interested in backing it, it's currently on Kickstarter. And it will wrap up on Tuesday, July 23rd, 2024. They already surpassed their $5,000 goal, which, as we know, are no longer a thing. So it will back. It will be out there. Queen Games seems to only put their games out on Kickstarter these days.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. We talked about this before, too, you know, like established publishers using Kickstarter as basically like a pre-order platform. Yeah,
this is, I'm on record with my thoughts about Queen Games and their City Collection stuff, but this is now the fourth version of these games. Four separate versions. I don't even know how you would tell what you're getting anymore. People are going to start sending each other the wrong ones. Mm-hmm. I guess none of these are in retail, so retailers don't have to deal with this, but like four versions, guys, seriously? And we've got Classic Edition, Deluxe Edition, we've got Essential Edition, and now we have the Classic Special Edition. And they're all just like, it's them trying to fine tune their SKUs so they can charge as much as possible with as little as they can in the box. That's sure. All this is. This is like market research.
What about the Double Ultimate Edition?
Yeah, right. Now it's deluxe, but now everything's twice as big, so it's $600.
But is deluxe better than ultimate? I don't know.
Yeah.
What's your scale? How does that work?
We need a flow chart. Yeah.
Oh, you have the deluxe? Fine, but I have the essential. Wait, no, I have the classic edition.
People are going to order this and be like, I have the good one. It's like, no, you don't. The deluxe edition is the good one. You can't get those anymore. Second good one.
I have the V1 Platinum. Was the version 1 Platinum better than the deluxe?
But
It had that one card that's not in the current offering.
Yeah, like between the first Kickstarter and the second one, like Stefan Feld hand signed the cards. The second one, it was printed by a printer, so it wasn't his hand signature. So if you really want to be a cool guy, you got to you got to play with edition with the actual hand signatures. Come on.
Yeah. If the signature doesn't smudge when you first shuffle it, it's not a real signature.
It is smudgy. It needs to show up 3 months after the campaign ships because Stefan Feld's like, I don't want to sign all these. It's such a ridiculous thing that they're doing. I don't know.
I remember when I broke out at Marrakesh and I was teaching it, and there's a lot of components, so I had to set it up. And I was like, oh, and look, it's got these challenge coins in there with Stefan Feld's, you know, face on it in the game. And they're like, oh, cool. What does it do? And I'm like, absolutely nothing. It does absolutely nothing.
But it must have it.
It adds $10 to the cost.
It adds $10 to the cost. So Stefan Feld, still the best. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't. Why? Why Queen Games? Why? Why are you doing this? This is not. Yeah, this is going to be a lot of confusion at the table. So,
right.
Back it or avoid it at all costs. Spin a wheel, flip a coin, flip a Stefan Feld coin because there's one in there for some reason. So, I mean, I would love to learn the story behind all of this. I think that would be a very interesting marketing production kind of story. So, but the later editions were after the four, Dave, they were less, they were of a lower quality. So it wasn't just the printing, but it was actually the components, and then the stickers were different. There was a whole bunch of stuff, and then people really got upset. And so, yeah. So, yeah, that was a thing. Stefan Felicity's Collections on Kickstarter. Good luck. Good luck to everyone out there. Let's see what happens.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so that's all the games that we want hit the table. Let's talk about the games that did hit the table this week. And we'll let you know that if those games are a buy and you should run out and pick those games up. If those games are a play and you should sit down and play them. If those games are a dodge and you should avoid them. Or in fact, if those games are the dreaded burn, and like all of the multitudes of Stefan Felicity Collections, just burn them, man, because I don't know what else you would do with them at this point. So, Anthony, what'd you play this week?
All right, so I got a box in from Flat Out Games with three games that I backed from them last year. One, Nocturne, I'll talk about next week. That's the new Randy Flynn game. And then the other two are actually just two versions of the same game. And that's Cascadia, Rolling Rivers, and Rolling Hills. Now, it's easy to think, hey, they made two different Cascadia Rolling Rights. They didn't. They made one, and then they made small adjustments in each box. It's very much a Pokemon Red Blue situation. I'll get to, like, you know, do you need both of them later, but you don't really, so unless you really really like the game. So this is a flip and roll and write. It's a flip because you are flipping cards each turn that represent opportunities to score, and there are 20 of those cards that will count the rounds. So there's a lot about this game that's very similar to Cascadia, which I've gone on record as one of my favorite games. And that game is a tile flipping game where you flip tiles into a market along with animal tokens, and then you will basically draft those into your own personal tableau to try to meet different scoring conditions. It's very, you know, abstracty puzzle, but very pretty as well, with Beth Sobel's artwork and like representation of the Pacific Northwest and the animals and habitats that live there and where I'm from. So there's a lot of things that go into that, but it is also a very good game. This is a roll and write version of that. So you don't get the pretty tiles because you are writing things on a sheet of paper. But you do get some pretty cards with some nice artwork on them. How the game works. You have a sheet of paper that you're going to use to track the number of animals that you collect, see, interact with. It's not really clear thematically what's happening there. Then you have a second sheet of paper that is a map of some sort that you're filling in. That's where you're going to score your points. At the beginning of each round, you're going to put a card out from the deck, and then those are going to slide across this tableau at the top of the table. There are four slots. Each slot has a second card that's a completion bonus, where if you complete that card, which is basically submitting the animals that you've collected or seen to the card, you're going to get some points as well as a completion bonus that could benefit you in some way. And those things will vary in every game because there's a bunch of different completion cards that are available to you. And you only use four of them in each game. So there's a lot of replayability here, just in terms of the number of cards they give you. The interesting thing here, and if you've played a lot of Roll and Writes, you know that typically there'll be like a central die roll, and then everybody will interact with that central die roll, right? We're talking about like relatively simple weight-wise roll and writes. There are much bigger, more complex ones that don't do that. But, you know, there's a central thing, everybody's using it, and then how do you use it as efficiently as possible? In this game, there is still a central die roll. There's four dice, one special die, and three just regular dice. But then you also have two personal dice that you roll into your own space that will affect what you ultimately take. Now, your own personal dice get added to that pool effectively, and what you're looking for is a collection of animals. So let's say you roll three salmon, two birds, and a bear. Three of those are in the central, two of them are your own, and then one is on the special die. You choose one of those animals, and you collect that number of that animal and add it to your personal sheet. Not everybody else has those numbers because they have their own personal dice. So it's much less likely that everybody's going to pick the same stuff or have that overlap. There's still no interaction here at all. There's no benefit to getting the cards first or scoring anything first. You're all just using shared information, but you do have your own shared information, which I found interesting. You don't see that very often. Once you take those, you mark them down on your personal sheet. You like cross out the last number, you add up and see, like, now I have six fish and I have three bears. You look to see if you can complete any of the available objective cards. And if you can, you score the points, mark it down in your own personal sheet, whatever that might be. Each of these games comes with four different personal sheet options. There's A, B, C, and D. A, B, and C are fairly similar between the two games. They're not exactly the same, but they're close enough. And then D is pretty different, and that's the more complex version. And so that's kind of an important piece here, too. Like, what is different between the two games? The D sheet is very different. The special die has different action abilities on it. So like, some of them might be like, take a second type of animal, or take or double one of your personal dice, things like that. And that's not available in both games. It's like you choose one. There's also like a mini expansion that comes in each of the boxes. So like in the Rivers one, the mini expansion gives you these special powers that you can use. And in the Hills, it's got a very different approach. The game itself, though, is exactly the same. So do you need both games? Like, let's say you play it and you love it. Oh, I'll get the other one. I would say you don't really, unless you're going to play it a lot. Mm. There's not a significant enough difference. Now, you could throw it all together. You have some variability, but ultimately, you can only use one special die. You only really want to use one of the mini expansions, and everybody's going to use the same sheet every time. So unless you're going to play the game a whole bunch with the same people, you don't need two different versions of the game. And it's not like they tricked everybody in the Kickstarter and said, oh, they're very different. They were clear about all this, but I did back both, and now I'm like, why did I do that? So I don't need both of these games. Is it worth picking up? So again, I'm a huge fan of Cascadia. It's a buy. It was my game of the year, the year it came out. And so this was an instant back for me as somebody who loves the theme and the artwork and Randy Flynn's games in general. I don't feel like it lives up to Cascadia, but doesn't really say a whole lot. That's, for me, that's like a really highly ranked game. It's a solid roll and write. And really my main issue with this is how fiddly it gets managing your tallies. Right, because every time you get or spend an animal, you have to cross out the number and add and put a new one in. So that little sheet at the bottom looks absolutely insane at the end of the game. Like, it's just full of little tally marks crossed off everywhere. If you forget to do it once, you're like, how many did I have? And that's, you know, that's an issue a lot of roll and rights have. And it is pencil based. Although I will say, and this could dock it a little bit, it does not come with any writing utensils. What? You need your own pencils. So if you bring this game to game night and forgot to grab some pencils, because most roll and writes come with pencils or pens, you won't be able to play. So grab pencils.
What a slap in the face.
Right.
Roll and write? No pencil?
No pencil.
It's in the type of name. It's right.
I know.
Yeah. I
know.
I dumped both games out because I'm like, maybe this one didn't come with them. I'll check the other one. There's no pencils.
Maybe I'm getting cranked right now.
I know.
They're hiding these pencils somewhere. Maybe it's in the box.
Yeah. Just like the little golf pencils that cost a penny.
I know. What a slap in the face.
Yeah. So that was dumb, but the game itself is pretty good. So is it worth, I mean, if you have Cascadia already, should you get the roll and write? I would say if you like roll and writes. Does it replace it? No. Is it better than it? No. So for me, it's a very high play. I would say it's not a buy just because I like Cascadia so much. It fits the same kind of table space and group composition, and it's not significantly longer than this game. And it already has a lot of variability with the different scoring cards and the expansion. If you love Roll and Writes, though, it's doing some interesting things in that regard. It's just not doing, it's trying to do the Cascadia thing within that space, and the abstraction of the animals, the fiddliness of the animal sheet. I don't know. It didn't quite click for me the same as like some other Roland Rights or Cascadia in general. So it's a play. I liked it. Chris, you probably wouldn't like it at all.
Yay, good. I avoided that.
Yeah. But it's if you like a Roland Wright or like Cascadia, then it's worth checking out.
Only if you go to a Minikbaf golf course first to get pencils.
Right. Yeah, get some pencils, because I literally had to like raid my kid's backpack. I'm like, where are the pencils?
The kid gets to school and be like, I'm sorry, teacher, I can't do my schoolwork. Dad stole all my pencils to play board games.
Yeah.
I want you to go to the office supply closet. I want you to pick up a box of Bic pens. And I want you to bring back the Bic pens. It'll be explained later, but I just need you to do this right now.
That's so. The thing I've never been a big fan of is just like the downgraded components. It's supposed to be a board game or a tabletop game, and they're like, how much can we get away with? Like, you have to draw the board, or you have to, it's not a board at all. You have cards, or you have dice that you have to roll, and there's markers, but the markers aren't good either. You'll have to get new markers, and now we're at a new level, which there's no pencils in the game, so.
Yeah.
Boo.
Honestly, I feel like 80% of Roland Rights are a 7 out of 10. Like, and then you're like, it's fine, I guess.
Yes.
You get the occasional one that like really elevates it or does something new or unique. This one doesn't do that. I do like the personal dice. I think that's a cool idea. I'd like to see that more. But otherwise, put some pencils in the box and give me a reason why I need to own two of these, which I don't.
This is almost as bad as Mosaic not having a score tracker in the base game.
Yeah, that's really bad, though.
Well, like you said, I mean, if I was going to game night and I didn't know, I'd bring that game to game night and realize we didn't have pencils or pens. And
yeah,
in an industry now that everything is super deluxified, the pencils should be super deluxified, right? They should be like made from like beaver wood or something, and like locally sourced, and you know, good for the environment. And for every pencil they make, they plant 10 trees or something.
I want this pencil forged in the heart of a volcano.
You're selling me on it, man.
I'm telling you that I can make talk to me, guys. Talk to me. We can make some deals here.
Yeah. it's Cascadia. And so, like, the deal with these is Flat Out Games runs the Kickstarters, and then it'll go to AEG Games. They'll distribute it, same as all their other games.
Sure.
So it will be available probably at Gen Con, I would imagine, if not then by the fall. It was only $19 on Kickstarter. It was only $35 for both of them, which is probably why I backed both of them. I don't know what the retail value is. This probably $20 or $25, but put a pencil in there. I'll give you an extra 50 cents.
So basically it's being distributed by AEG and Staples.
Right. Yeah. Get some pencils.
All right, Dave, what'd you get a chance to play this week?
All right. So At the Table for Me is a game that it did not get a whole lot of marketing fanfare. And I actually only got it because I needed to balance out a trade. The game is called Beacon Patrol. It's a cooperative game. It's published by Pandasaurus. And it's a tile laying game that's played cooperatively. In the tile laying game, you are playing as ships who are part of this quote unquote Beacon Patrol. And you are trying to, quote-unquote, discover as much of the map as possible by laying out these tiles. It's a cooperative game that is open information, so everyone knows what tiles you have and how to play them. Unlike other tile-laying games, though, all the tiles have a specific orientation, so you have to play it in a very specific way, which led to some interesting moments because we're like, oh, we need a tile. You have the tile that we need. It's just in the wrong orientation. That harbor should be on the other side of the tile. So it was a fun game to play. I really like the artwork. It's kind of like, I would say like kiddie, like line artwork, which is really, I think, engrossing for me. I don't really need it to be super fancy or super photorealistic. What was interesting about this game, though, is that it's a cooperative game that has victory points. And I can't really think about other cooperative games I've played in the past where there's victory points. Most of the time, it's either you're all going to win or you're all going to lose. So this, like, we played it with the two expansions, and I looked in the rule book afterwards, and I was like, yeah, everyone, we killed it. We're like the best cartographers ever, you know, like according to the rule book with these expansions, like we scored pretty high. And I was like, okay, well, that was an experience. So I can't say that it is something that is I wouldn't say like I was super overwhelmed by it. I also wasn't super impressed by it, but I, you know, like I enjoyed the play, and I have many of my friends have small kids, and I have a bunch of nephews and nieces who are, you know, getting to that age where we can start playing some tabletop games. So this is one of those games I would definitely bring to them, like as a next step up. So if you have the opportunity to pick up Beacon Patrol, or at least just play it, it's a very fun, very mellow play. It scales pretty well between, you could play it solo or up to six players, which is what we did. And I thought it was overall pretty fun. And again, like I said before, I'm not a cooperative games player, so I'm really trying to stretch right now and play more cooperative games. And I'm glad I got Beacon Patrol on the table.
So since it's a co-op game that has points, mm-hmm. so is there an individual winner on top of a group?
You know, I don't think so, because you just score all your points at the end based on like the map features you're able to, they call the game like discover or expose. Sure. So there's no individual point scoring. It's just total points based on your entire shared map.
Do you typically win more often than you would in another co-op that they would want to measure like how much you won by?
I only have one play, so.
Oh, okay.
It would be very hard for you to lose in this game. I feel like you have to really be not paying attention. And I think that if you could flip the tiles in any orientation, yeah, you could totally like max out your score. So I think that the tile orientation was very important for making the game, you know, like at least somewhat challenging.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of how a lot of games do like solo scoring, where they're like, you're going to do your stuff, you're going to mm-hmm. beat the game, but then here's a number so you can know how well you did doing that.
That actually like reminds me when you're talking about it before, Anthony, with the Cascadia Roll and Write. Have you played Hadrian's Wall?
Yes.
That Roll and Write?
Yeah. Yes.
So I had that on my shelf for a while, and I was like, I'm going to get this on the table. And I watched like Tom Vassell's review, and it's like, yeah, it's just solitaire. You know, like you turn over the card, maybe you trade. But then I discovered it on BGA, and I played a ton of BGA games. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think I need to own the physical copy. I would never want to do all this math on paper.
Yeah.
So that's what it feels like. You know, like I guess if I were to play Hadrian's Wall solo, it'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, well, there's my score. That was a thing. I did it.
Yeah. This is legit one of the ones I'm thinking of. Like, yeah, there's more complex ones that do way more stuff that'll mm-hmm. give you a headache. That's not what Cascadia is. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, and the artwork is very, like you said, it fits that kind of beach kid, not mm-hmm. childish, but kind of like throwback nostalgia, kind of chill zen kind of game. So
yeah,
very nice. Well, this past week, thanks to our good friend, Game Master Dave, we got a chance to play Silver and Gold. This is a flip and write, and as everyone knows, I'm not a big fan of the roll rights or the flipping rights as much, with few exceptions. There are certainly some exceptions that I do like. This also has a polyomino aspect to it. You're not really putting pieces together, but it certainly plays a part as far as scoring the different cards. This comes from Phil Walker Harding, and I think the copy that we were able to play was from Pandasaurus Games. Dave will have to let us know. And you know Phil from Sushi Go, Baron Park, Gizmo, Emotep, so many great games. Cacao, Dave, mm-hmm. you know, that's one of your favorite games
yep.
out there. And basically what we're doing is a flip and write, so it's very much like Welcome To. And it's 2 to 4 players. It's a very short game. It's a filler game, but a very enjoyable game, surprisingly enough. So basically, you are very thin on theme, which is fine because it's a quick kind of flip and write game. We are treasure hunters, and we are exploring these different islands, these treasure cards, and the polynomino shapes of the island reflect how many points are on the game. And on each of these different islands, there are different symbols. There are coins, there are X's, as in X marks a spot, and there are palm trees. And each of these things does something different. So you start with a couple of these cards to begin with, and then expedition cards are flipped over. Now, these expedition cards are also polyominoes that you will able to, based upon the shape that comes out, and there are 8 different shapes, one gets pulled for that particular round, and everyone knows generally what's going to be coming out. You don't know in what order. Again, not to mention the one that's missing. And you'll be able to cross off on your islands based upon what shapes come out. So you might get a two down, or you might get a three down and one over. So think Tetris as far as crossing out those different polyominoes on your island. Now, the fun part is how you're able to kind of like couple those things together. So I mentioned that there are X's on the island. X is like, X marks a spot. You discovered something. Excellent. If you're able to take that polyomino shape, cross that off on your island, the X allows you to cross off another box on that card or another card. That's really essential in the game because there's going to be times where you're going to have a single block that has not been crossed off, and the expedition cards do not have a single block. So this lets you fill things in. On top of which, now we're talking scoring. Completing the card scores you points and allows you to take a new treasure card onto your tableau. As you are scoring these cards, you're going to keep an eye on the scoring symbols. There's symbology on the card itself, so there's an opportunity to score additional points based upon certain scoring markers that you have on your card and how many of those particular treasure cards you're able to score. There's also coins. As you cross off the coins, you all have a tracker that you're trying to cross off. You score 4 coins, you'll be able to go to the main card that's on the board, and that'll tell you how much you'll score as far as points concerned based upon that particular trophy. You're able to score 3 trophies in the game in descending value, so you want to score those trophies as soon as possible. And then probably the most unique aspect of the game, at least as far as scoring is concerned, is the palm trees. When you cross off a palm tree, you will take a look at all the other treasure cards that are available in the market. You will see how many palm trees are out there, and then you will score that total number of palm trees in your palm tree section. So by scoring coins, you'll get trophies. By scoring palm trees, you'll get points. And by scoring those different treasure cards, you'll gain the main points for that card. Plus, there's some modifiers that will score additional points. Anthony, you'll be shocked to hear, this actually does come with markers.
Right.
I know. It's a thing. So it's a fast-paced flip and right. You're just crossing off boxes. You don't have to be nice and clean and neat, which I think is great because a lot of flip and rights, a lot of roll and rights, you have to like just make perfect lines and crosses and be able to figure out. This, you're just crossing off things to score points. It's very quick and simple. Makes a lot of sense. It was good to play a 2. It was good to play a 4. Game flows really quick. The turns around super fast. I really enjoyed playing the game. I was surprised. I didn't think, you know, sometimes you get these little games to the table, especially these flip and right, roll and right kind of games. They're not as, you know, interesting, even in that small spot. This really did hit a notch. So silver and gold gets a play for me.
You know what I feel like really fits the mold for a really good roll and write or flip and write game, mm-hmm. is when you have that good dynamic of being able to take like more actions. And I really like that with silver and gold because it's like, oh, if I cross off here, I'll get that X, and I could cross off here and I'll get another X, and I cross off here and get that coin, and then, you know, like lock out the coin. I think like, you know, Hadrian's Wall does that really well. I haven't played the Cascadia roll and write game, but like, you played Gongshan Clever.
Yes.
That's very clever. You know, like that also has it. I played a lot of, I'm forgetting the name of the game now, but it was a game right game. But yeah, any roll and write where you're not locked into like, oh, I can only cross off one thing this turn. I was like, 100%. Oh, if I cross off this thing, I can cross off 5 more things.
Yes.
That's even better. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The That's So Clever series, the Gongshan Clever, those are, I think there's 4 of them now.
Mm.
That's like the, when you say that, that's what I think of, because I've had combos in that where I'm like, and then I do this, 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 and like, it's so much fun.
I'm beating back the Huns.
Yeah.
Hadrian's Wall.
Hadrian's Wall, yep.
Yeah, I think the worst part of those games is when you can't do something with the dice, or you can't do something with the card. You're like, and I do nothing on a game that I should be doing something with every round. I mean, the original one that I love and I still love to this day, and I own a copy of it, is Roll Through the Ages. Because that had, as you said, Dave, if you haven't played it, it's not only does it have wood pencils, Anthony, but it has wood dice.
Yeah.
And it has those kind of wood, chunky wood boards that you could play like in a bar with these little pegs in it. So that was always a lot of fun too. That's probably my favorite roll and write game. All right. So that's everything that we got to the table this week. Now on to our feature review. So our feature review this week is talking about Dave, our favorite games. You have a favorite game, Dave, and you want to share with the audience because maybe they have not had a chance to play it. Maybe they're not experienced at the table, or maybe they don't know anything about it whatsoever. So, Dave, why don't you tell us about your favorite game?
Sure. So, this is the current favorite. I actually picked this up at PAX Unplugged this past year. So, it was December 2023. I was walking around the expo hall, and I just see this one, like, big booth. It's taken up, like, a corner, so it's one of the larger ones. And they're just selling one game. It's just a small box game. And I can't for the life of me think about, like, the amount of money went into marketing for this one small card game. And I, you know, like, I get invited. I do a demo table standing up. It's called Trio. And like I said before, I played Beacon Patrol. It's a cooperative game. I'm not a cooperative game player. Trio is a memory game. I'm not a memory game player, but I didn't know that beforehand. I was like, okay, I'll try this. You know, I'm here for new experiences. I'm going to try this new game. Trio is a game that is a very simple card game. It's a deck of cards made of cards with numbers 1 through 12, and there's three copies of each card. And the entire game plays where you have a hand of cards, you have some cards out in the middle of the table, and you can ask, on your turn, you're going to ask other players questions. You can ask them to show everyone publicly their highest card or their lowest card. And the object of the game is you want to find all three copies of a single card. So if you ask someone to show them their lowest card and they have a one, and then you ask someone else to show them your lowest card, they have a one and you have a one, you ask, quote unquote, ask yourself to show the lowest card, you find the last one. You take all the ones you put in front of you, you have one set, you want to get three sets of numbers, and then you instantly win the game. What I think is really great about this game is that it's very fast, it's very fun to play. The memory component is actually dynamic, because if I find the three ones, when other players ask those other two players later on what their lowest card is, it's not going to be the one anymore. It's going to be a different card. And I think it makes it so that you cannot just zone out when it's not your turn. You have to be paying attention every single turn because you're going to get information from other players. And I recently brought this to a group I was traveling with. They're not gamers, but I brought out this game Trio. I explained it, and they just had a blast playing it. And it was one of those games where it's like, oh, okay, I get it. Let's play again. Let's play again. Let's play again. And you crank out like five or six games. And I'm just enamored with any game that has such a simple rule set and something that you can get on the table very quickly, but still has a lot of, you know, like interesting nuance where you can play this several times and not get tired of it. And I just think that, like, I bought Trio at PAX Unplugged. I played it there with another group. They went out and bought it, and then they shared it with another group, and they, you know, their other group went out and bought it. And I was like, I should be getting like affiliate income from this Trio vendor, because I've just referred like six orders over to them. But that's Trio. It's a very small box card game. I think the publisher is called Happy Camper. They're based in the UK. But it's great. Like, if you don't have a copy, I highly recommend picking one up, or at least just playing it, because I think it's a fantastic game. Again, coming from someone that doesn't like memory games, I think this memory game is great.
Yeah, I had a chance to play this, or something similar to this. I'm not sure if it's exactly the same game. It's hard to tell from Board Game Geek. But it was, like, I showed up at a friend's party. I was visiting Pittsburgh, and a friend picked me up at the train station, and we went over to a party, and they were playing this Japanese game called Nana. Mm-hmm. And it was a very similar experience to what you're describing. Like, it's like a memory game. I don't know. I'm just getting off a train too. I don't want to think right now like that. But it's just such a fascinating approach to that. And it's, you know, and I remember going back home and looking it up, and it just was not, it didn't exist. Like, I don't know if they had imported it or just gotten lucky and found a copy, but it had not been published in the US. So I didn't actually know that Trio existed until you mentioned it, and then looking at the Board Game Geek page and seeing alternate names, Nana, and I'm like, oh, I remember Nana, that was great. So that it's fantastic. Like, I know what to look up. It's so great to, when there's like a small, simple, accessible card game like this that isn't doing too much but does what it's doing in a clever, unique way.
So, Dave,
yep.
Who does this play best with? Because, again, Board Game Geek talks about this as a 1.04 weight.
So yeah, it's incredibly light.
Is this a gateway game? I mean, again, like, even the term gateway game is a little fraught because...
Yeah. I think that, I mean, it's generally open to everyone that wants to play like either a very light game or just a filler game to kill some time in between other games. I have yet to find a person that did not like it. If anything, like I kind of get a lot of questions because they'll say, like, I'll explain the rules and they'll be like, okay, well, what else? I'm like, no, that's it. Those are the rules. Let's begin playing, you know?
Yeah.
Most of the time when people screw up though, it's like, they don't realize you can't play out of the middle of your hand. You always have to play the highest card in your hand or the lowest card in your hand. Because there's another rule, and it's like the quote unquote, like, you know, instant win rule, which is sevens. So if you ever collect all three sevens, you win instantly.
I love that.
And the reason it's set up like that is because seven is right in the middle and it's hardest to get out. So, you know, like I think everyone should play it. I just am really into games that have such a simple rule set, but will get me to keep coming back because I think it's just, you know, really well set up and really well executed. And even the art is great too.
Yeah, it's really nice. Pretty, it's definitely something distinctive at the table, and you're not dealing with cheap components. I mean, doesn't have pencils, but yeah, it's something good to get to the table. And we're always trying to look for games that fit that kind of niche as far as like really being a family game, but also being a game that if people who may play cards, like basic kind of card games, will actually be interested in playing something different. So this seems to be different enough as far as like a gamer's game, but also light enough that you can actually play with a large number of people.
Yeah.
So, and again, an easy teach, which is always very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Dave. So Dave, a lot of people are wanting to get in contact with you because you do all the things out there. Why don't you give us a rundown of those things once more and where people can find you and find more about the stuff that you're doing?
Sure. So easiest way to get in contact with me is to go to my website. I'm at davangdesign.com. That's davengdesign.com. You can find more of my work at universityxp.com. That's where I publish my blog. I was also host my podcast that Chris was on before and also my YouTube channel. And then my nonprofit is available at banditosgaming.com. That's banditos gaming.com.
And if people go to Banditos Gaming and they go up to the Panera, they can play trio with you.
Yeah, please. We're at the Panera in Suffern, New York, which is in Rockland County, New York.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. So until next time, this is Chris.
This is Anthony.
And this is Dave.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.